The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 3rd of February, 2021. On the podcast today, Dan Betts, CEO of Hummingbird Resources, HUM ticker there, of course, and Dan discusses their Q4 2020 gold production and 2021 outlook. And also, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the Chinese New Year and Empire Metals, Power Metals, Rainbow Rare Earths and Soul Gold. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll see loads of other content. Check it out. There's an article there on Hummingbird, of course. There's one there on Open Orphan. There's one there on Gfinity. And check out our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day is Gfinity. It jumped up 5% there. It's now Cromec, up 7%, 7.5%. Biggest fall at Gene Drive, down 5.85 at 88.5. And, of course, you can check all these out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dan Betts, CEO of Hummingbird Resources. HUM is ticker. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you've got a release out there for your Q4 and 2021 outlook, and we'll dig into that. But as always, Dan, if someone's listening right now and they're looking around for some gold plays, maybe just explain what Hummingbird's all about, please.
Yeah, sure. Hummingbird is a gold mining company with a producing mine in Mali called Yanfolila. We have a development project called Karusa that we're looking to start building this year that will double our production to be over a 200,000 ounce producer. And then we have a number of other growth interests and projects, be it organic exploration or our project in Liberia. And I think, we have passed net cash, so we have a strengthening balance sheet. And I think Hummingbird is well positioned to capitalize on a strong gold market.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, Q4 2020 and 2021 outlook release. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Dan.
So, obviously, the purpose of the results today was to announce last year's results. We did advise the market earlier last year in the quarter that we were sort of going to be lower on our guidance, which is what manifested itself in Q4. Difficult mining conditions, and we never caught up from the sort of mine plan that we reconfigured during the year when COVID was at its peak, sort of slowing down the hard rock to protect the processing plant in certain areas. However, that said, we paid down the debt successfully, paying down over $30 million during the year. Project level EBITDA of north of $70 million on an unadjusted basis. And I think passing that inflection point is a big moment for any company. I think we invested in exploration quite heavily last year, which was the first time we've really done that. And I think the results look very exciting. Looking forward to updating our mineral resources, where I hope to have replenished a considerable amount of what we've mined over the last few years. But also looking ahead, a lot of the exploration results are outside of the known resources. So I think there's good potential to extend further our mine life going forward. And at the Yanfolila mine, we have a number of other things happening this year, bringing on other pits like Gonka and Sanamali East and West, and also going underground at Kamana East. So these are all investments, I suppose, in growth and in the mine life at Yanfolila to provide a cash cow, I guess, to support the growth of Hummingbird into a gold company. And that growth initially will be manifested through building Karusa in Guinea, which is effectively going to double our production. Mm. We have been doing a lot of work in the detailed engineering and design and costing of that project, and we'll be looking to accelerate our exploration there as well. And obviously that a lot of the growth is going to come through developing the Karusa project, Justin, which we will be commencing this year. And we were always attracted to the grades at Karusa and fast-tracking exploration to extend that mine life and showcase what we have there is going to unlock a lot of value for us, I think.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned there about the exploration, and it's been going well, and you're doubling the exploration budget to more than $10 million, US dollars. Talk us through why you're doing this and your expectations there, Dan.
Well, ultimately, I guess exploration success is a result of dollars spent. I mean, I don't mean to be blasé about it, but we were very, very slow on committing to exploration at Yanfolila because we were so capital constrained. And that has held us back in developing the value of the business and showcasing the mine life. So I think this year we've shown there is exploration potential that can convert into economic ounces. And in 2021, we need to fast track that and do more of it, both at Yanfolila and at Caruso. I think it's central to our growth proposition and the value we have that's organic within Hummingbird.
Yeah. And you obviously you mentioned Caruso and doubling the output there. How is progress going there?
Well, it's going well. I mean, I think there are definitely challenges in terms of the macro environment. There are cost issues, steel's going up. COVID is obviously providing a lot of challenges in terms of getting people to site. And in terms of costing, just things like time in transit and quarantine and getting the right people to site. So we've been going conservatively in terms of committing to a start date because we want to make sure when we start that, you know, it's possible to deliver on the project on time and on budget. But in terms of the project itself, I think it's going to be very robust, high grade and be good for the company. Yeah.
Okay. So, and Dubi in Liberia, your earning partners there, it's Pasadena Gold, listed on the TSX, and they seem making good progress towards delivering that DFS and exploration program. Talk us through their progress, if you could, Dan, and expectations in the coming year.
Well, I mean, look, I think they've had their challenges in terms of getting to grips with Liberia logistically. The roads, the bridges, re-establishing the exploration camp, but they've done all that and they've got the drills turning and that's what matters. And I'm looking forward to the news flow from that in terms of both increased confidence in the inferred resources and exploration potential to extend resources and obviously developing a feasibility study, which are the earning milestones for the company. But, you know, Pasofino's got a market cap of somewhere around 50 million Canadian dollars. I think it's a great number for Hummingbird in terms of showcasing the value we have hidden in the company because this isn't costing us anything. We get the use of Pasofino's dollars and an expert management team. Mm. And I think they'll create a lot of value during 2021.
Yeah. Let's talk about ESG. It's a massive theme, of course, going forward for every company. Take us through your initiatives, if you could.
Well, I mean, look, ESG has been core to Hummingbird since we started. And any mining company, I'm sure, can list dozens of initiatives they have, whether that's education, healthcare, training. For Hummingbird specific, at Yanfolila, we have a number of poultry farms, market gardens, soap manufacturing initiatives. We have beekeeping. We're training hundreds and hundreds of local people, alternative livelihoods for a sustainable income after the mine is finished. But for me, ESG is bigger than that. It's about showcasing what the mining industry can do to improve the livelihoods in the areas in which we operate. And this single mine origin initiative that we have started in terms of tracing gold all the way through from a mine all the way through to the retail jeweler, and the jeweler can pick up a ring, see where that was mined, and see the projects that are happening and have confidence they're buying responsible gold, is an initiative we are hoping to expand considerably this year and, you know, get others in the mining industry to sort of buy into.
Yeah. Okay. Dan, as always then, if someone's liking the sound of this, not yet following the story though, give them three bullet point reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add Hummingbird to their watch list, please.
Well, I think we have a strong organic growth pipeline in terms of exploration underground at Yanfolila land and the new Caruso mine, not to mention Dubi. We have reached an inflection point where we are net cash and a strengthening balance sheet. And I think we have learned as a company, we've grown up. So the production should be steady and Yanfolila should provide a solid platform going forward to develop the business. So, you know, we're excited about the future, and I think better place to overcome the challenges thrown at us.
Excellent stuff. And good to chat to you, and hopefully we catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, I'm good, thank you.
Tell me about Chinese New Year. I mean, you said it's going to affect the metals prices a little bit and they take some time off. What's happening there?
Well, the Chinese do take time off. They officially, they take a week off, but I think a lot of them take 2 weeks off. And I'm quite sure they need a break because they work jolly hard out in China.
That's a long break, though, isn't it? 2 weeks off. Everyone, I mean, to an entire nation of 1.5 billion people taking time off. Surely there must be some people working, because that would, like I said, they are what? A fifth of the, well, no, in fact, a fifth of the world's population. Well, a quarter of the world's population, yeah.
It makes the migration in the Serengeti of the wildebeest look like a small travel event.
Yeah.
As you say, it's a billion people, you know, get on a train and go back to the villages where they were born. Because if you remember, China has been developing its economy, but you go back 25, 30 years, most of them were living subsistence. Lifestyle in the villages, on the farms, you know, in a very efficient subsistence economy, but it wasn't westernized at all.
Yeah. I remember actually last year they were worried, weren't they, about the spread of coronavirus because the big, you know, getaway. So I remember that now.
Well, they're very worried again this year. They've been offering refunds on all flights within China, so they really want to keep people at home. And I think the Chinese clamp down a lot of the news coming out, anything to do with the coronavirus they clamp down on. But we know somebody who goes through the Chinese press and picks out interesting bits of news for us. And we know they've been offering incentives, and they've shut down certain cities and certain suburbs of Beijing and stuff like that in order to reduce the risk of further infection. And I think they're going to bring in more measures to stop people from traveling through the holiday period. They really want people to stay at home. They don't want this thing spread.
Wow. And you think what? Why does it affect the metals prices then a bit, you think?
Well, because lots of factories turn off over the Chinese New Year period. They just don't need to bring the metal in. So, I mean, they tend to stock up a bit. Towards our Christmas, over our New Year, and then they run down those stocks. And then what happens when they come back from the Chinese New Year? They start to restock again as the factories restart. So it's kind of important. This year is a little different to normal because they've been pushing the economy to regain its growth. I mean, they've done incredibly well. Mm-hmm. If we go back a year ago, the story was more about restricting pollution, the Chinese Green Shield policies, that sort of stuff. This year, I think we're going to see less concern about pollution levels, although they should be worried, because if you get the coronavirus, then pollution becomes much more of an issue if your lungs have been damaged or impaired in any way. And I think the Western world is going to have to clamp down much more on pollution as a result of that in order to manage the cost of healthcare, if nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool stuff. Yeah, it's amazing the nation there, how fast it's grown, isn't it, really? And, quite impressive. Okay, let's look at some individual company news. In alphabetical order, you mentioned something happening at Empire Metals, EEE.
Empire Metals, they've just finished a 4,000-metre drill program at their Eclipse Gold Project in Western Australia. That's just north of Kalgoorlie. Kalgoorlie's famous for all sorts of things in Western Australia. Mainly it's skimpy bars and stuff like that, and girls with ping pong balls. But the drill program, we expect them to come through with some quite good gold results off that drill program, and they've had some pretty good gold grades there already. So we think the Eclipse project will get bigger. I think that will be a mine sooner or later. It's just really a question of who's going to develop it. It might not be a huge gold mine, but I think it's going to be a nice little project for someone to do.
Okay, cool.
And remember, they're also in the process of selling their Georgian assets. where there was an impasse with the Russian joint venture partner. They got an offer of $7 million worth of stock in Candelaria Gold. The Candelaria company is building actually a silver mine in Mexico at the moment. So it's Candelaria Mining Corporation. It's listed in Canada. But the Russian joint venture partner has a first right of refusal to buy Empire Metals Georgian assets. So it needs to stump up $7 million worth of cash, in my view, to get that. Will they have a limited amount of time in which to make that decision? Empire Metals is going to get paid one way or another. Mm. And that'll be good for the company.
Yeah, cool. Let me saw the chart. I always like to look at the chart, these guys here. It's okay. It's a steady rise. It's not nothing that spiked out of the crazy, but from April, it was one pence. Now it's 3.5 pence. So it's done quite well since April. Cool. Okay, what's next? Power Metals. POW!
Yeah, Power Metals. Well, look, run by Paul Johnson. He's a good man. He's got a very good nose for exploration. Even though he's not a geologist, he seems to be very good at picking out the winners. Mm. So we're happy to back what he does, and he's put money into Kavango Resources, which is drilling in Botswana. Kavango's run by Mike Foster. Who is a really good geologist. I've known Mike for over 25 years, and he really knows what he's doing. He found a very large gold deposit in the DRC, which is now within the portfolio of Arc Minerals. So there's progress going on there. They've got a new strategic joint venture on a project in Botswana. That's looking quite interesting. So we'll see what comes out of that. And also, they've got money in Red Rock Resources. Again, there's interesting licenses that those guys are involved with. So I think there's news to come. Very early stage exploration, but good exploration in my view.
Yeah. Mike Foster, is he from Australia? Sounds like a good old Australian guy, Mike Foster.
Oh, no, he's very English.
Michael Foster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, he's good quality. He was part of the Reunion mining team many years ago that sold the Scorpion Zinc project to Anglo American for a lot of money. Back during the Asian crisis, if you remember, back into the late 1990s.
No, I wasn't born then, John.
Only kidding.
And if you think about it, there wasn't much going on in China at that time.
No, exactly. Cool. Okay, so it's power. Next is Rainbow Rare Earths, RBW. What's happening?
Well, look, really, really good news here. But they've discovered some thick, high-grade veins of rare earth ores. So this is the highest-grade rare earth mine in the world, by a pretty healthy margin, actually. And they've got mineralization grading up to 50% of rare earth oxides. A lot of that is neodymium and praseodymium, which are the two particularly valuable rare earths, because those metals go into the permanent magnets that are so important for offshore wind farms and for electric vehicles. So, you know, if you're buying an electric car and it's got rare earths in the magnets in the motors, then you get so much more range out of the vehicle. And these prices are surely going to go up. And definitely the demand is going to increase a long way for these metals. Yeah. And so discovering more of it at the Gakara mine in Burundi is good news. And the fact that they've discovered more of it in particularly thick veins is important, because this mine works on a sort of semi-artisanal basis, or has done. And George Bennett, who's gone in there, is now ramping it up and mechanizing the mine and making it work better. So he's going to increase the production. And the fact that they've discovered more of this material is good news.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Yes. Oh, yeah, there's a revolution happening. Did you see that? In fact, I tweeted it earlier on, but There was a Bloomberg survey, and they said in the race for investment dollars, cars are pulling ahead. The five-year compound annual growth in clean energy investment is going to be 0.15%. The five-year compound annual growth for electrified transport, 20.74%. It's going to be close to like $400 billion worth of investment up to 2025. So, yeah, everything transport-related, EV-wise, is getting the big bucks.
Well, what we're going to see is, you know, it's not just going to be London and New York. It's going to be every single city and eventually the towns as well will all start to create clean air zones. And sooner or later, there'll come a point when you can't drive a diesel vehicle into any of these places. If you want to go and visit a shop in town somewhere, you're going to have to be in an electric vehicle or you're going to have to take the bus. It's as simple as that. So we're all going to go in. We're all going to end up owning electric vehicles. I mean, I'm going to still hang on to my Land Rover for a while, but the fact is I'll have to buy probably a little electric runaround, maybe a Mini of some sort, in order to get to certain places.
Yeah. I think, do you know what? I think that, you know, the development and the innovation, the evolution of the range of batteries will do so well. I think even by 2030, it'll be like a normal petrol car, as fast to charge as it is to fill a car. And, the range will be as long as a full tank of petrol, you know, or diesel.
Well, we shouldn't be looking for fast charging. What we should be ensuring that we charge slowly overnight in order to preserve battery life. Yes, there will be a fast charge option for, you know, to ease range anxiety. But most people are going to want to go for the slower type charging situation. But you're right, the batteries are going to become so much better. They'll have more range and more capacity in them, just purely because of the improvement in the quality of raw materials going into those batteries. I mean, there are step changes to be made if they can create silicone anodes, for example. The problem is the silicone anodes, they have the thermal coefficient is different from the rest of the battery, which means they expand so much more when they get warm. So that is something that's not easy to sort out. So, but the improvement in the quality of the graphite the graphite going into the anodes is important. Improvement in the quality of the other materials going in will mean that the batteries actually become better quality. There'll be less fires, which is always a concern.
Solid state you want. Yeah, but I just even think there'll be things in 5-10 years' time, John, we're not even thinking about now, developments that we're not even thinking about. And even fast charging won't damage the battery. There'll be breakthroughs like that. We often see things. If you've gone back, do you remember when, literally, when mobile phones first came out? And even then, we were surprised. I remember my father owns a car sales, and he went to auctions, and there was traders there, car traders, with these, almost briefcases as a battery, and attached to it was a phone. And literally, the battery was a briefcase, you know, you used to carry it around. Now, if someone showed you an iPhone, you know, then, and said, this has got the internet on it and everything, videos, you can do everything. It's like a piece of alien technology, so far advanced. And we never envisioned that. And I think that's going to happen with batteries. You know, it'll be the case where they're probably not going to be using the elements we're talking about now. It'll be something different, you know, like air. You know, or glitter, or fairy dust. You know, it'd be things we haven't thought about. Then that's human innovation, isn't it? You know.
Well, it may be that Ilika, which is doing solid state batteries, becomes one of the technology leaders going forward.
Hopefully, John. Yes. Now you're talking, because I own stock. Fingers crossed, eh, John? Buy some.
Well, look, it's looking very promising.
I think they'll probably get bought out by Tesla, to be honest with you, because Tesla needs solid state, especially for their big vehicles and their vans and their lorries. So hopefully... the way forward, I mean, they do charge, you know, solid state, not just Ilika, but there's about half a dozen or a dozen companies around the world, you know, sort of pioneering these solid state batteries. And the fact of the matter is, they haven't scaled up commercially yet to massive batteries, but they're showing, you know, 5 times faster charge, but 6 times range on them. They're non-flammable, so it seems like it's the way forward. Just at the moment, pushing it forward, they need to see more money to sort of, you know, to push it forward. But it's going to happen, and that's the way forward compared to what we have at the moment, you know.
Well, Ilika's got a market cap of £340 million, and I've got to say, I wouldn't want to short this stock right now.
No, exactly. The same with, I mean, and it looks, on traditional metrics, you know, Ilika looks you know, a little bit expensive, of course. But if you compare it to his peers, like in America, you know, like QuantumScape, they're worth $20 billion. So, you know, and again, where do you, how do you price the future? It is the future. You know, these are the, so that's why Tesla's gone mad beyond traditional metrics, what, 1,000 times P or something ridiculous, because you realize they are leading the way in the future and everyone's copying them. So, yeah, how do you price in the future? You can't really. So that's why, and like I said, in 10 years' time, when everyone's using solid-state batteries, they're probably, this is seen as undervalued right now, you know?
Well, I've noticed QuantumScape has come back rather a lot.
Yeah, it has, yeah. It was $45 billion.
It is on the way up, certainly.
Yeah, well, it was, hopefully they meet in the middle, but it was like $45 billion. No revenue. You know, same development path as Ilika. And it's $45 billion just because of Bill Gates and Volkswagen invested, of course, and it's in the US. But so there we are. You know, hopefully that the valuation gap closes.
And there's another British battery maker called Oxis Energy, which is well worth a look at. I think, you know, they have a lithium sulfur battery. Mm-hmm. It's not quite solid state, but it's not far off. The Ministry of Defence have invested in that, as have a whole range of other aerospace companies, because they're very high density batteries that are being trialled in aircraft at the moment, and they're building a factory in Brazil to make batteries for Mercedes buses, hopefully. So we'll see what happens there.
They're not listed as yet, are they?
No, it's still private. I think if they were listed, they would be off to the races.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, you know, they've got to do it, haven't they? Because if they need money, and they do, obviously, in development stages, they need that capital investment, so they'll have to list, I suppose. And there's plenty of demand for that. Like I said, investment is piling into this kind of... So now is the time for them to list, isn't it, really? So hopefully they'll do that. Marvellous. John, anything else?
I think, well, there's always stuff going on in the mining industry. I mean, there's more exploration going on for Sol Gold in Ecuador. Mm-hmm. We saw Nick Mather, the chief executive, stepping aside last week. I think one suspects that BHP and Newcrest, who are big mining companies, maybe had a hand in that. But the fact is they're developing a very large, very expensive underground block caving copper mining operation, and that needs somebody who's, you know, I mean, Nick Mather is a diehard exploration expert, but what they need is a mining guy now to take the helm and build that mine.
Excellent stuff, John. Thanks for that, fella, and we'll catch up at Speaky next week.
Thank you very much, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at 5, Conduity Capital, up 4.8% to 3.2. At 4, GST Technologies, or GS Technologies, up 44% to 0.875. At 3, Dev Clever, up 5% to 24.5. At 2, Gene Drive, down 5.85% to 88.5. And at 1, Bacanora Lithium, down 15% to 47.5. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs. At 5, Dev Clever Holdings trading statement. At 4, Open Orphan new challenge study quarantine clinic. At 3, Tizian Life Sciences CEO exclusive interview to discuss COVID-19 trial. At 2, 4D Pharma oncology program update. And at 1, Argo Blockchain January operational update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.